eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
What's going on, everybody? It's Monday night, and that means it's time for the OBR's Unscripted. I'm your host, Michael Keefe. Find me online at Garage Piers Mike. And joining me shortly, hopefully, is my co-host, Andrew Spade. You can find him online at Andrew Spade. He said he's getting here, so he will be here as quickly as possible. While he gets here, let's go over some basics, specifically regarding the OBR. The OBR, your home to all the best off-season Browns coverage. Oh, look who's here. Look who's here. Hold on. I can cut for this. Look who's here. It's Andrew Spade. What's up, Andrew?
Hi, Mike. Sorry for being seconds late. Life is much more hectic when you have a full-time job.
Miffed. No worries.
Catching on.
It happens. First of all, on the OBR, great week planned for this week. I was just getting to that. So if you're not subscribed to the OBR, make sure you're subscribed to the website. Make sure you're following the socials. There's a great week this week. Andrew, you and Jake doing franchise mode tomorrow, I'm guessing, right?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Cool. That Tuesday night slot's awesome. Very fun to talk about.
Yeah, what is it? I know. It's fun. Well, it's fun to be unpredictable, I found.
Oh, well, you guys are... You're nothing if you're not that. Are we still getting the music, by the way? Are we still just jamming to the music in the background?
I'm not hearing anything. That might just be in your head.
Oh, there it went. It went. Thanks, Ian. Ian McBride in the background. Thanks, Ian. So what I do know is tomorrow at 9 p.m. is Garage Beers, and we're shifting gears. We have a great interview, and I know it's great because we did it today. But we're going to play it live tomorrow with... The director, the VP of communications for the Cleveland Guardians, Curtis Danberg, is going to come on and talk Guardians baseball with us. We're going to relive last year a little bit. We talk about this year a little bit, everything going on down at Progressive Field. Now that the football season is over, it's almost time for pitchers and catchers. It's almost time for spring training. So on Garage Beers this week, we're going to talk a little baseball. Then Wednesday, you're going to have OBR Weekly with Barry and with Fred. So just the two legends, or the one legend and Barry, that are going to be doing OBR Weekly. And then Thursday, it's All Eyes on Cleveland with Brad Ward. So it's a great week of stuff going on here on the OBR, and all of the written content that you can get on the OBR's website. Yes, Ty Sox, we're playing the taped interview live tomorrow. Yes, we are.
That works.
Pre-recorded segment tomorrow. But
behind the scenes.
But we've got like an hour. We've got like an hour of other stuff to talk about live. So it'll be a live show, and we'll play the recording. That's come on. And I'm not throwing Kevo. I'm not throwing shade at Barry. These are basically Barry's words.
A little bit of shade.
These are Barry's. That's okay. A little shade.
Sorry. So like a sapling.
I do want to, I appreciate Fumble 13 while we were waiting for the countdown. He said, we need better music if we're going to be on hold for 5 minutes before the show, Zeppelin or Stones. And Fumble, I just want to thank you for offering to pay that licensing fee.
Yeah, generous.
Much appreciated.
Awfully generous.
Yeah, very generous.
All right, let's talk some football, Mike.
Let's talk a lot of stuff. Again, this is unscripted, and this is the week after the Super Bowl. Super Bowl happened yesterday, Andrew. The Kansas City Chiefs on a almost last-second field goal take down the Philadelphia Eagles in what was a really, really entertaining football game. I mean, I think that's what we all wanted. And I think it's what we talked about, Andrew. Last week on the show, I said, I don't know what's going to happen in this game. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether it's going to be a blowout either way. I don't know whether it's going to be close either way. Yep. I don't know what is going to happen in this game. And kind of when you broke down the game, it's exactly what happened. Philly, those weapons for Philly are awesome. They have those receivers. Even the running backs yesterday were really good. Those weapons for Philly were awesome. But in the second half of that game, it was Andy Reid, his coaching staff, and Patrick Mahomes just making plays, and the Kansas City Chiefs come out victorious. They win the Super Bowl, man. How'd you enjoy that game?
It was fantastic. I mean, it was, as you said, it was everything we wanted it to be. It was back and forth. There was a point in the first half where it looked like the Eagles were going to walk away with it. There was a part there where it was like, oh man, this could be over by halftime or a little bit after. And then, of course, you know, the Chiefs came out in the second half and did, you know, what they have done to a lot of teams over the years. I mean, Patrick Mahomes is the best quarterback in the league for a reason. You know, I think Andy Reid now is up there in terms of the best coaches, not only in the league, but really of all time, just in terms of consistent success.
Yeah.
And, you know, they did what great teams do. And that was the reason that I picked the Chiefs ahead of time, is because the Eagles are a good team. And obviously they proved that they belonged, but the Chiefs have that little something extra where, man, I mean, if things, you know, if they're up against the wall more times than not, they bail each other out. I mean, that, think about how big that, I mean, obviously Hurts just dropped it, but for Nick Bolton to have the presence of mind to scoop and score there, you know, keeping them in that game in the first half when their offense was really struggling, they scored 7 points in the first half against the Eagles defense. That's really impressive by the Eagles defense, and surprising for the Chiefs to struggle that much. And then Mahomes gets hurt and comes out and plays lights out in the second half. So, yeah, it was a classic Super Bowl, and I watched, you know, every minute of it. I was engrossed the entire time. And, you know, I think the knee-jerk reaction in the moment was to kind of be a little let down by the ending and that penalty call, which, you know, is understandable. But really, with 24 hours of retrospect, I don't, you know, we're not going to remember that. You know, we're going to remember the Mahomes scramble to get them down into that position. That's really what you know, was the defining moment of that game. And there were, you know, a ton of great performances, Jalen Hurts and Mahomes and Nick Bolton, and I can go on.
Yeah, the beginning of that game was what I kind of thought when we talked about the Eagles. It was, again, it was their talent everywhere else that wasn't head coach and quarterback, and their quarterback was outstanding. This is not to put down Jalen Hurt, but man, they just felt way better than the Chiefs when it came to defense, when it came to, man, some of those catches, that touchdown catch on that long bomb to AJ Brown, where he adjusted and then readjusted. And every time I saw the replay, the ball just hitting his hands and sticking in the end zone. What a route he ran to get that touchdown. They were just on fire. They were on fire. Yeah. And the Eagles, I mean, it's got to be a tough loss. It's got to be like you wake up, it's Jalen Hurts this morning.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think a lot of people in our shoes are going to say, you should feel pretty damn good about what you did.
100%.
Because he should feel really damn good about what he did. But you were this close to winning. Mm-hmm. You were this close. And you didn't do it.
Yeah.
It's got to be tough.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, it's, I think the, probably knowing him and the way that he has taken on all these challenges over the past few years, he probably is pretty sure he's going to be back there next year. Right. I mean, that's probably the thinking, but we know from being longtime NFL fans that, you know, it always feels right within your grasp and you just never know, you know, year to year, you just never know how it's all going to play out. So, it's got to feel pretty rough. And yeah, I agree that he certainly can be incredibly proud. I mean, he, you know, obviously the way things work now with the NFL, you're never going to have probably never again have a losing player win MVP, but that's the kind of performance from Hurts that, like, given how close the game was, I wouldn't have been unhappy if he was named most valuable player. I know that's not how it works anymore, but I think you can make the argument.
Oh, without question. I mean, I think it's hard to take it away from Patrick Mahomes, but Jalen Hurts, the performance he put on was between running the ball. Was this comment. Jalen Hurts, Kevo said it. Jalen Hurts almost as good as Brissett on 1 yard to go on, like, third, fourth, and one.
I think he's better.
He might be better, but I don't think that's just a Jalen Hurts thing.
Right.
Like, I think Jacoby Brissett is Jacoby Brissett. When they would go for those sneaks, Andrew.
Yeah.
You probably could just run that for your offense for the Eagles, the way that offensive line blocks. That is unbelievable. Right. Jalen Hurts was walking across the line of scrimmage.
Before
he got touched. Rugby. That offensive line is crazy. It's so hard not to. The Eagles are an easy team to like all of a sudden.
Yep.
Like, I don't think the Eagles have always been an easy team to like, but right now they're an easy team to like defensively, offensively. Mm-hmm. A lot of guys on that team that are easy to like. And of course, the first one on that list, if you're a Clevelander, is Jason Kelce. And man, just watching him just drooling. I mean, there aren't many guys, Andrew, from a physical perspective, that have that much of an impact on the game from the center position.
Right.
He's incredible.
Yeah.
Usually you talk about centers, you talk about like the mental aspect of the game. You talk about reading defenses, calling plays, adjusting the line, all that stuff.
Yeah.
He's a physical freak of nature, that dude.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and I mean, I think he definitely deserves credit for the mental side too. He's the full.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and I know you weren't saying he doesn't. I mean, he's the total package. And, you know, it sounds like from what they said last night, you know, that he's going to be back again next year. And like I just said, I mean, they return a lot of these players, the Eagles do. So
makes me so sad.
You know, I mean, we'll see what happens with the hires, right? Because it came out yesterday that Shane Steichen is sort of the leader in the clubhouse for the Colts job, and Jonathan Gannon is the presumptive favorite for the Cardinals job. So they might lose both coordinators. That's a challenge, certainly. You know, that's a lot of expertise walking out the door all at once. And of course, Steichen calls plays, but I mean, there's no reason that the Eagles shouldn't be right back in the mix next year as one of the favorites to go back and win it.
Hey, let's give a shout out to Paul Spencer here. Subscribe for Paul. 19 months in a row. Shout out to you, Paul Spencer. Love that.
Bernie Kosar.
Gannett. Yeah, there it is. And my birthday. My birthday's in 6 days. Everybody buy me presents.
6 days. Okay.
Yeah. Come on the 19th. Just Sunday. Like Bernie Kosar. What was I going to talk? Oh, so I got really good buddies, a couple good buddies that are Eagles fans, right?
Yeah.
And so you brought up Gannon going out to Arizona potentially. He can stay there, I guess. He's not super popular, it doesn't sound like, in Philly.
Well, not after last night. 38 points. And
the text came, I want to say something in the first half. My buddy was like, because they were talking about Gannon, and I was like, oh yeah, you guys are gonna be searching for coaches. And he was like, well, we can't get rid of Gannon fast enough. And I'm like, this is when the Eagles are winning and like dominating or defensively. And I'm like, man, maybe I don't know anything. Hey, Brian Cassidy, yours is in 9 days. Let's go. Happy birthday, Brian. I don't know. I wonder if that's more of a fan thing, you know, like Pittsburgh fans that want to get rid of Mike Tomlin and all of us. And we're like, please, yes, please get rid of him. I think they know something that I don't know.
I mean, of the two sides of the ball, the Eagles defense has less talent, I think, than their offense. Right. Like, you know, there's a component. I mean, that Eagles defense cratered in 2020, you know, and then bounced back last year and then had an even better this year. I think you have to give the coaching some of the credit for that. He's obviously well thought of. He's a young guy, you know, on the rise in the league. So, you know, having said that, I mean,
knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/RS10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/RS10 today.
Hey, I'm Brett Podolsky. co-founder of The Farmer's Dog. We make fresh food for dogs. We started the company when we saw what a huge difference it made in my own dog, Jada, when she stopped eating ultra-processed kibble and started eating fresh, whole food. The Farmer's Dog food isn't fancy. It's just real food delivered to your door in pre-portioned packs. It's better for them and easier for you.
Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/podcast. That's thefarmersdog.com/podcast.
I think, you know, what part of it is what makes a good head coach isn't necessarily what makes a good coordinator, right? So, like,
right.
I could see Gannon going on and being a very successful head coach, but it also being true that the Eagles fans are kind of done with him as defensive coordinator. It could cut both ways.
Yeah, well, that's true. That is true. He could be a better head coach than coordinator. That is very true.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the game's going on. The Eagles go into halftime with a lead and momentum, all the momentum. The Chiefs come out and just grab the momentum. The Chiefs did not have a drive in the second half where they didn't score.
Correct.
A couple of the most impressive things. Well, the one, to me, the most impressive thing, you could say Patrick Mahomes and the ankle and all that, especially when it got rolled up on. That looked gross. Oof,
yeah.
But Jalen Hurts responding. After the Chiefs had taken the lead, they're up eight, and Jalen Hurts just drives the Eagles down the field. They score a touchdown. He runs and fights forward for the two-point conversion. They tie the game. I went, oh, man, this kid's – that's his arrival moment, right? Mm-hmm. It didn't matter what he had done to that point in the game. Here's your arrival moment. You just late in the game tied the Super Bowl, and you did that. That two-point conversion was spectacular. That was awesome. Like that moment of the game, I don't remember how much time was there. Maybe 4 minutes, 5 minutes left?
Yeah, the Chiefs did an incredible job of milking the clock to use the entire clock. It was about four something when the Eagles scored. Yeah.
That was awesome. For me, on the other side, the Chiefs, I love the fact that the Chiefs just ran out the same play twice to score touchdowns in the red zone. They just mirrored it.
Yep.
And Philly just... like they read Philly's defense like a book. There's your Andy Reid advantage right there.
Yeah,
they read Philly's defense like a book. They knew exactly what they were going to do. They set them up with the jab, and then they threw the right hook, and it just worked to perfection. That you don't see that too much. Usually, if a team gets burned on a play, especially wide open like that in the red zone, they're ready for it the next time.
Right.
Philly was not ready the second time.
Yeah, somebody pointed out today that Doug Peterson ran something similar with the Jags earlier this year and got the Eagles on it too. So I thought that was interesting too, the Peterson-Reed connection as well. So, I mean, like I said before, there was some talk before the game that Andy Reid might retire after this one. And, I mean, there's a good chance the Chiefs will be back there pretty much anytime they want, right, because of how good their team is. But I'm always in favor of these guys going out on top. I mean, you think about Bill Belichick. Like, I know that he wants to prove that he can do it without Tom Brady, but like, he should have just retired in 2019 or whenever. No, that was anyway the last time they won a Super Bowl, whatever year it was. Like, I mean, watching him struggle through having Matt Patricia as offensive coordinator, and now he's bringing back Bill O'Brien. It's like for Andy Reid, it's like, I mean, if Mahomes gets hurt next year and, you know, a bounce of the ball, whatever, or, you know, all of a sudden it's 2 years, you haven't made one. Now you're coaching in 2026 and you wanted to be done 2 years ago. Like, go out on top, guys. I mean, like, I don't, there's, you know, there's, there, to me, it's like, you're better off quitting sooner rather than later, but like too early rather than too late. But that's just me.
Yeah, lots. There's not really anything to prove for Andy Reid, but life is, you know, you got to understand too, life is scary outside of it.
Sure.
And even Andy Reid, you know, not to bring up a terrible thing, but Andy Reid and his family have dealt with some pretty tragic stuff even lately. And football, it's got to be his way to just get to the office and, like, I don't want to say escape, because that's probably the bad, you know, the wrong verbiage, but just to take his focus away from something else. And I think a lot of guys, you see it with a lot of guys that retire and then they're like, nah, I don't want to retire. I want to come back and do this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So it's hard.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Big storyline from the game last night. Brian Cassidy just brought it up in the comments, says he'd have to rewatch it, but the turf.
Yeah.
How is that a thing we are dealing with in Super Bowl 50, whatever, in the year 2023?
Yeah.
How are we dealing with turf issues?
Right. Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
It's embarrassing.
Yeah, right. I don't know the science behind it, obviously. I am not a turf scientist, and I won't pretend to be. I will just say that the NFL is very good at missing, you know, the forest for the trees or the trees for the forest, however, whatever, you know what I mean? Like, this is like a small thing that's a big thing, right? And, you know, it didn't seem like it affected the game, like, in terms of, like, an obvious, like, guy running in for a touchdown slips and falls or something like that, right? But you know, guys all night were slipping and couldn't trust their footing. And I'm sure it had an effect. I mean, I think it was it Carlos Dunlap that said something about it afterwards? Some player addressed it. Maybe it was on the Eagles side. But you know, when players are bringing it up, when players are bringing it up after the game and kind of complaining about it, that's when you know it's kind of crossed over to the level of unacceptable. And I just, you know, it's just this really frustrating thing where it, you know, it's kind of like the officiating thing. And I don't mean to speak just about the call at the end, but in general, it cheapens the product, right? If it's the showcase game of the year and guys are falling over, like they're playing on an ice rink, just in the same way that it takes 5 minutes to determine what a catch is, cheapens the game. That cheapens the game, and it makes it look, you know, I don't even know what the word is. It's obviously not amateurish, but it's sloppy. It's you know, it's like a spectacle with, it's like it's all show and no substance.
I have seen games in the snow in Cleveland that haven't had turf issues like that.
Yep. Right.
I have seen and E. Gillen says it in the comments. Yeah. They had turf issues all season in Arizona.
It's been a decade.
Maybe quit. What are you doing? Maybe your system of wheeling the turf out and then wheeling it back in, and like, maybe that's not working.
Yep.
Maybe don't do that.
Right.
But like, in the Super Bowl, to have, and you could tell it definitely, to get to the original point by Brian Cassidy, I think the area where it had the biggest impact was on the pass rush. I think it was on both sides.
Yeah.
You're talking about two teams that are really good at rushing the passer.
Yep.
And what did Philly end up with, a sack?
They did not.
Philly leads the league, like, record-breaking year in team sacks. They get none.
Right.
And again, it's hard to sack Patrick Mahomes, but you can get to him once or twice usually. They get nothing. And Kansas City, I think, had one, unless they got one at the end, something like that.
Yeah.
You could tell it was in the trenches, a complete detriment to the defensive players.
Yes.
And like you said, that cheapens the game. That stinks. If Philly's one of the best teams in the league at doing that, and you take that away from them, that cheapens the game.
Yeah.
So, all right, let's get to the one thing about this game that everybody was talking about, that everybody's going to talk about. You said it'll get forgotten, and I agree with you over time. We'll see how long that takes. It's not forgotten at this point. The end of the game.
Yeah.
The Kansas City Chiefs, trying to run down the clock as much as possible. It appears as though the Philadelphia Eagles get a stop on third down. Kansas City's going to have to kick a field goal. And then the flag comes out, and there's a defensive holding call against Philadelphia that allows Kansas City to basically milk the rest of the clock out until they kick the field goal with like 4 seconds left.
Right.
Lots of talk from LeBron James on Twitter saying that can't happen in that moment. You can't call that penalty, blah, blah, blah. To other people, you know, the officials and who's the head ref on Fox that does, like,
oh, sure, Mike Pereira? Pereira, right?
Yeah, Mike Pereira saying, yes, obviously we could see where this happened. But even he was like, I don't know about this call. There's a lot of conversation about this call. Andrew, when you watched it live, what was your thought? And has your thought changed over the last 24 hours?
No, I mean, you know, I think, like, big picture, number one, NFL officiating is very inconsistent, right? Not only game to game, but within games. We've seen it as Browns fans over the years. I don't remember off the top of my head which game it was this year, but there was a game where Jerome Boger was the referee. And you could tell by, like, midway through the first quarter, it was going to be one of those games, right? Where, like, he was just going to, they were going to just do what they're going to do, and it was going to get stupid. I mean, I sometimes will tweet from the OBR account during the game, and I have, you know, I tweeted it in the first quarter, like, get ready, this one is going to suck. And then it just proceeded to suck for the next 3.5 hours. So, you know, I think with that context in mind, I kind of watch all of these games with a little bit of like, okay, I guess we'll call that, you know, like I'm not, my expectations are low, I guess is the best way to say it. So in the moment, it felt like a pretty consequential call, obviously. And, you know, those calls, especially the way that Bradberry did it, he did it in such a way that he really, you know, the main angle they showed kind of hid what he did, right? Mm-hmm. Because the guy was running away from the camera. You couldn't see how much it slowed him down. So, you know, I thought it's one of those things where what it looks like on the field live to a referee is different from what it looks like on a replay to me. So I'm not like, I was never up in arms about it, but I also understand the point of like in that position, you're making a call that fundamentally changes the entire course of the rest of a Super Bowl that is tied. So you want it maybe to be a little bit more blatant than that in that context. And that's something, you know, I saw you and Philly going back and forth on this on Twitter today. The idea that officials do need to be a little bit contextually aware, right? That like you don't call the game the same all the time. There are times when you exercise a little bit more discretion. So I was interested to hear your thoughts on that. But I think the reason I dislike that the officiating is so inconsistent is because I don't want to talk about it, right? Like best games of football you watch are the games where you don't talk about the officials.
Yeah, listen, that is something Philly and I had a great conversation on Twitter. He was kind of making the point that rules are rules. If you break the rule, it gets called. It is what it is.
Right.
And I'm telling you, if that's how you want football called, you'll hate the game of football within 2 weeks. You'll hate the game of football.
Right.
If the officials call every last little thing that they see, because technically it's a rule, you will hate the game of football. There are contextual things that you have to play in. There are penalties that happen away from the ball that are inconsequential to the play that you don't want to see a flag on. There are penalties that happen well behind a play that don't affect the play that you don't want to see a flag on. You don't want to see pass interference on a Hail Mary when guys are crashing into each other unless there's something ridiculously blatant. So to me, you got to have that. And so when I first saw the call, Andrew, I didn't love it. Now, I feel like I could see the hold, even though they didn't show the jersey grab, you could see Juju like slow down and you could see Bradberry catch up to him. It's a sign of a hold, right?
Yep. Yeah.
The reason I didn't love it at first is that the play resulted in Patrick Mahomes just kind of fading. He was getting pressured.
Right.
And he just kind of faded off of his back foot and lobbed it to the end zone.
I think that saw the hold, right?
And maybe he did. But my initial reaction was, it felt like a little bit of a bailout play.
I agree.
Like the Chiefs weren't running a good play, and now they're getting bailed out for it. It's the equivalent of being in like a 3rd and 25 and then just throwing a long bomb down the field, hoping to get pass interference.
Right.
You never want to see a pass interference.
Like a 3-point shooter that sticks a leg out because they know they don't have a good shot, but they can get fouled. You know, they're buying something.
Hate bailout calls. Yeah,
for sure.
The more... Now, 24 hours later, I'm 1,000% okay with the call. I was okay with it last night. I just thought, I hate those bailouts. Now I'm even more okay with it, just more context being added to it and watching it more. And you know, Ian's in the comments right now just saying he saw the hold happen. It affected the play. I think it did affect the play.
Ian has strong beliefs about the legality of this play.
But, yeah, you got to – Unfortunately, in that circumstance, if you see that happen, and if there was a jersey pull and you see it as an official, you got to call it. The thing that if you want to know what I hate more than anything about the whole situation, it's not the call. I feel like the call is fine. It's the fact, why is every defensive penalty in the NFL an automatic first down?
Yeah, I think that's a conversation worth having.
That is so obnoxious. That should have been, what was the down and distance there? I know it was 3rd down. Was it like 3rd and 8 or something like that?
It definitely was longer than 5.
Yeah. That should have been a 5-yard penalty, replay the down. 3rd down and 2 or 3. Right. The fact that in a 3rd and long situation, a team can get a 1st down on a simple hold.
Right.
is nonsense. It goes back to the NFL's thing. I don't know, what was that, like a decade ago or two decades ago, where they were like, we really need to help out the offenses. And so all penalties were basically designed to help the offense.
Right.
They got to get rid of some of that. There are some of these penalties that happen, live ball defensive penalties. And a defensive holding should not result in a new set of downs. Give them 5 yards, let them replay the down, and see what happens. That could have changed the whole complexion of the conversation about it.
Right.
But instead, you give them a first down, it lets them run the clock out. That's not fun.
No.
That's not fun.
No.
I would have much rather seen the right call get made. Kansas City, maybe they don't get it on third down after replaying the down. They kick the field goal. Now Philly gets the ball back with, like, I don't know, a minute.
Right.
That is way more entertaining than giving them a first down for a simple, non-overly obvious, non-overly blatant call.
Right.
That's what pisses me off about it.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't disagree. And I think, you know, it's one of those situations where the game does favor offense. You know, the rules of the game favor offense. And in that situation, it became pretty blatant. I mean, you know, Mahomes, you know, knows, I mean, to Ian's point, he knows that if he throws that ball, even if Juju doesn't catch it, you know, the penalty is probably going to get called. And so it's a bailout slash it's a 50-50 ball, you know, that he's going to let his guy make a play on. And it makes life easier on a quarterback. And so, but that's, you know, that's what puts butts in the seats, right? And there were 73 points in the Super Bowl. So overall, probably nothing's going to change. But in that moment, it does feel pretty crummy.
And Ty Sox saying here, would that result in, if it wasn't an automatic first, would it result in more holds? Maybe every once in a while. Like you, Ty Sox again says, if I was a DB, I'd grab every time on 3rd and 13. Maybe.
But you got to remember that it's just for holding. It's not for interference, right? So you got to grab before the ball is thrown, right?
You got to get them at the right time. So you could miss.
Right.
If you don't miss, you're giving them a free play, like Red Leader said here. It's just like an offside. So, okay, now they got a free play, flag out.
Right.
And even still, you got 3rd and 13, maybe, and now we're talking about 3rd and 8. That's still a hard thing to convert.
Right.
Fine. Maybe that wouldn't be such a bad play. But maybe that just plays into the strategy of the game.
Yeah.
But are you gonna hold Ty Sox if it's 3rd and 8? Are you gonna hold if it's 3rd and 9? Are you gonna hold if it's 3rd and 7? You better not.
Right. Especially with more and more teams going for it on 4th down. You know.
We talked about it all season, Andrew. How the difference between the Browns on 3rd and 6 and shorter, or 3rd and 6 or longer, was astronomical.
Yep.
So you're not gonna be out there grabbing on 3rd and 7, 3rd and 8.
Yeah.
Given teams 2 or 3 yards to go on the replay of the down, you're not doing that.
Right.
So hey, I don't think it makes that big of a difference.
While we're talking about rule changes, you know, I know Fumble was in the comments talking about the Eagles' particular version of the quarterback sneak getting potentially outlawed this offseason. I'm interested to see what happens with that, because there's two options, right? Either they make it illegal to push the guy, and they make it, I don't know how you can legislate how low the offensive line gets, because that seems even more important than the pushing from behind. But either they legislate something about that, or everybody in the league should be doing that right next year. I mean, those are the two options.
Everybody in the league should be doing that.
Yeah.
If they legislate away from that, that would piss me right off.
I'm not advocating one way or the other. Yeah. I think it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting. I hope they don't even consider it. I hope it's not even a discussion.
Right.
There was this thing. Remember the Bush push?
I do.
The Bush push
vividly
created the most wildly misunderstood situation in all of football rules amongst the fans. The Bush push, every fan felt like it's illegal. You can't do that. You can't push a guy from behind. And then you heard it we've heard it for decades now. We've heard it for decades because people don't understand it. The rule in football is that you cannot assist by like lifting a guy. You can't carry a guy forward. Right. If you're a lineman behind a quarterback, you can't pick his ass up and run him forward. You can push him all you want. As long as you're just shoving him in the back, shove him in the back.
Right.
That's all good. I agree. Red Leader, 1,000%. It's a fundamental play.
Yeah.
It is a fundamental play. And if you can't stop it as a defense, that's a you problem.
Yeah. Well, I would just say then that you will know if you have a good or a bad coach next year if they are doing this.
Uh-oh. Well, now I feel real good about Kevin Stefanski.
I mean,
he likes running these kind of plays.
Well, but they, you know, as you mentioned earlier, they were relying on Jacoby Brissett to specifically do what he does on sneaks, which is different from what the Eagles are doing.
For sure.
And the Browns have not, you know, they didn't do any of that stuff with the lower leverage level for the offensive line. They didn't do anything with the formation to help push the quarterback across the line of scrimmage. So they ran a lot of QB sneaks, but they were relied on Jacoby Brissett's specific expertise, and he probably won't be back next year.
No, I think, and I think the reason the Eagles are so successful at it, I think it's way more about what you said before. Fumble just said it. They run it like a scrum.
Yeah.
That offensive line, the reason other teams are not going to be, even if they run that play, they're not going to be as successful as the Eagles, is because there aren't many teams that have that offensive line or that skill or ability on that offensive line.
It's a technique. I feel like you can teach that technique over the course of an offseason.
You can teach the technique, but are your guys as good?
No, I understand. I understand. But I'm saying, I'm just saying, if your team doesn't try that version of it next year, I think that they're lazy, frankly.
Well, all right. We're going to hand out next year. We are handing out the Andrew Spade Lazy Award to whatever teams don't do that. It'll be part of the NFL awards.
I know from lazy. I know a little bit about being lazy, so.
It'll be part of the NFL award show at the end of the season. Speaking of the NFL award show at the end of the season, that happened. The things that have happened since the last time you and I were on, the NFL award show, the award ceremony. And we've got to take a minute here. We sat there on Thursday night. We showed up on, you and I showed up on All Eyes on Cleveland, Brad Ward show. Again, that's Thursday nights at 8 p.m. You and I showed up because we thought, all right, we'll show up. Joe Thomas, we'll get the news. We'll get the news. Well, they didn't announce it until 10:30 at night. And we were like, well, we're not going to sit here for 2 hours and do this. But that's the big news. All of Cleveland rejoices. All of Cleveland celebrates. The Iron Man himself, Joe Thomas, one of the greatest linemen in the history of football, is officially a Hall of Famer. I don't know about you, Andrew. I watched the video. I think it was Walter Jones that went to his house to tell him. I've watched that video maybe 200 times.
Yep.
That giggle, if you want to know why, if you are outside of Cleveland, if you're watching this or whatever at some point, now, on demand, whatever, if you're watching this and you're like, why do these people love that guy as much as they do? Watch Joe Thomas's giggle when they tell him he's a Hall of Famer.
Yep.
That's why we love him right there. Yep. That's he did what he did on the field, but that man is just iconic human being. Iconic human being. A Hall of Famer in so many ways. So good to finally see, Andrew, a modern Brown being inducted as a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Yeah, I said this on Thursday night, perhaps not very eloquently, and maybe I'll try again, but I feel like, you know, Joe Thomas making it into the Hall of Fame means that what happened over the first 20 years of the Browns' return can't be all bad, you know? I mean, it was rough so many times. And obviously one of the things that I hate the most is that he's got an 0-16 season on his resume, which is just absolutely astounding considering what a player he is. And obviously not playing in a playoff game. Despite those things, this is an achievement for that organization. And, you know, obviously it mostly accrues to him as a person, but you know, we often talk about everything that was wrong with the Browns over the course of that 20 years. It can't have been all bad if he stuck around. You know, I mean, you told the story of him turning down Peyton Manning, had a chance to go to Denver and try and win a Super Bowl. I mean, Joe Thomas deserves the lion's share of the credit, but I just think, you know, there is a bright spot for all of those years of misery, and it's him, you know, and it's as simple as that. And so to see him get rewarded in this way, I'm so excited to see Canton in August. You know, hopefully, I might try and get up there myself and just kind of bask in it, because I mean, the whole problem with the past 25 years is that there's been nothing to celebrate, but we can celebrate this unreservedly.
Unreservedly, and celebrate we will. I love that he brought up that story. He's done a lot of interviews online with the Browns. The Browns have released a lot of videos. But what I loved what he said. He brought up that story that he told us on Garage Beers on our 100th episode about Peyton Manning came calling, and he turned him down. And he said, nah, I'm going to stay in Cleveland. And he said, I'm not going to ask for a trade to Denver. And he explained it really well in one of the videos. I don't know if you guys saw it, but in one of these videos, now that he's a Hall of Famer, he said that his whole mantra, his whole motto was that you can count on me. You can count on me. Whatever's going on, no matter how good or bad things get, we need 10 yards, we need 5 yards, we need 2 yards, we need something, we need motivation on the sideline. Whatever we need, you can count on me. That was his motivation. That was his motto through his whole career. And so when Peyton Manning came calling and said, hey, ask for a trade to Denver, we could use it, we're going to go win a Super Bowl, in his head he said, well, that goes against you can count on me. Because if I leave, then these people that I've told forever they can count on me, the city of Cleveland can't count on me anymore. And that's why he stayed. And I think that's so cool. The videos were great. I know I see it in the comments. People are talking about when they did tributes to him, and you saw guys like Brady Quinn and Alex Mack and Josh Cribbs and Doug Deacon and all these guys. You saw his parents and his wife and his kids, super emotional. But again, it makes it so much more fun that this just couldn't have happened to a better guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for what he did on the field, nearly incomparable. You can argue that he's an all-time, you could say he is the all-time greatest, and nobody would really have an argument against that. But it's for what he does off the field too, and how involved he was here in the community, and his life as a dad and as a husband and a son and all that. It could not happen to a better guy. The fact that he's going to be in Canton forever. These videos do something to me every year, Andrew.
Mm-hmm.
They remind me that these guys don't always just take it for granted.
For sure.
And what I mean by that is Joe Thomas was a surefire Hall of Famer. Did you just lose power or something over there?
Yeah. Just for a second.
No, nice. There you are. Joe Thomas, easy first ballot Hall of Famer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we knew it was coming. There was no like suspense to this.
Right.
He's going to be a Hall of Famer. And yet his reaction when they told him he was a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
Was the gratitude. It you just can tell that they don't take it for granted. And especially when you watch the other guys. I don't know if you guys watched all the videos of them being told. Zach Thomas's was incredible.
Yeah. For sure.
You got to remember, Zach Thomas has been on that ballot for a while now.
Yep. Yep.
And it was starting to look like maybe Zach Thomas is never going to get in.
Yep.
And when he walked up those stairs and he saw those people in his house, he lost it.
Yeah.
I think even the first ballot guys understand that you can't take it for granted. And that's what makes the whole thing so cool.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, it's great. You know, I mean, I've been watching, they've been doing this with the way that they do it now with, you know, giving guys the news in this special kind of way and everything. They've been doing this for a few years. And I mean, obviously it's never been a Browns player. So I, you know, you watch it and you pay attention, but it doesn't mean the same thing. Right. I mean, some of the guys that have gotten in are players that are favorites of mine, you know, guys that I enjoyed watching, but it's different. It's absolutely different when it's a player that you watched game after game after game and you know had such a personal relationship with the city of Cleveland. It's incredible. And I you know, I know that Joel Bitonio probably has a case by the time his career is over, especially if he can finish strong over the next few years. Other than that, on the roster currently, I mean, it would be Nick Chubb maybe. I mean, Myles Garrett obviously is going to have a case. But you know, the thing about it, I mean, to your point about not taking it for granted, if Myles Garrett, I mean, God forbid I'm knocking on everything I own, but if he didn't play another snap, is he a Hall of Famer right now? I think that's, you know, it's one of the tricky things about it, right? Because it's a career achievement. And you know, a lot of players in Cleveland have had careers that have, you know, they've burned brightly, but it's been for short. And so Joe Thomas is the exception to the rule. And, you know, we just don't know. You don't know when as a Browns fan, you're going to get to watch another one of the players that you watched every week go in.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Think about all the guys Joe Thomas played with and how none of them got in. So that's
exactly
that tells
exactly.
you something.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, the fact that Brady Quinn isn't in is just a travesty.
Travis Shamockery. Other names in the class. Again, I talked about Zach Thomas, DeMarcus Ware, his video was great. Rondae Barber, another guy that you weren't sure if Rondae Barber was ever going to get in. Rondae Barber's in. That's great. Darrell Revis was an easy selection. And then some of the old timers, Don Coryell, an old coach, Ken Riley, Chuck Howley, and Joe Klecko. That was the Hall of Fame class. That'll be the induction. And it'll be I'm so excited to see what Canton is like when they're putting Joe Thomas in.
Yeah.
It's going to be rowdy down there.
It should be impressive. I want it to be, you know, championship parade for Cleveland for the Cavs vibes.
Yeah. Otherwise, did we learn anything else from the award ceremony? I think the one thing you got to learn is you got to feel pretty damn good. If your team can find a quarterback, you got to feel pretty damn good to be a Jets fan. You won both the offensive and defensive rookie of the year. Sauce Gardner and Garrett Wilson both take home the awards for the Jets. That's a hell of a place to start. Oh, we lost Andrew. Well, as he sorts through that situation, that's a hell of a place to start for the New York Jets. Coming away with the offensive and defensive rookie of the year. Patrick Mahomes, obviously the MVP, deservedly so. Nick Bosa, there you are.
Hey, hi.
Hey. How about those Jets?
Yeah. No, I mean, if they can, as you were saying, if they can pull off the quarterback situation, another team in the AFC, that'll be quite formidable. You know, I mean, you see lots of rookies of the year, you know, not live up to the promise of their first year, but I think everybody thinks that Garrett Wilson and Sauce Gardner are going to be really good players for a long time. And those players are good. I'm not 100% sold on the coaching staff there. You know, I think Robert Saleh is okay. The choice of Nathaniel Hackett as offensive coordinator is puzzling. And if another team was dumb enough to hire Nathaniel Hackett specifically to try and get an in with Aaron Rodgers, the guy that, you know, doesn't even know himself, you know, that would be a real miscalculation. Because if they swing and miss on Rodgers, and I mean, or even if they succeed, I mean, Hackett just put together one of the worst offenses in the league last year. The fact that he's an offensive coordinator for a defensive head coach, you know, that's it. I mean, and Aaron Rodgers is older. There's a chance that backfires on them pretty spectacularly. So I'm not like 2 feet on the Jets bandwagon just yet, because I think there's some pretty big questions they have to answer yet. And I don't know that. To me, it's not one of those situations where you get Aaron Rodgers and all of a sudden you start the victory parade, right? I mean, they're in arguably the toughest division in the league right now. You know, I think they still have some pretty big questions, not just the quarterback. I mean, the offensive line is an issue. Anyway, we don't need to go deep on the Jets.
No.
That's what franchise mode is for.
Yeah, just interesting. Again, I was saying Mahomes won MVP, Nick Bosa won Defensive Player of the Year, and neither of those things really surprised. So, right. That was a lot. I don't know that I need to see. How long was that show? Like 3 hours, 4 hours?
It was a full 3 hours. And Kirk Cousins was singing right before they announced the guys that went into the Hall of Fame. And
yeah, I don't need that again. I don't need George Kittle singing to Brock Purdy again.
Whew.
Ever. They're all singing Kelly Clarkson songs.
And it's kind of like, I mean, how all of the commercials last night were geared specifically towards people like our age and a little bit older, right? Like Gen Xers and older millennials. Like, it does not feel good. I do not like being. I am used to things being designed for other people and me kind of rolling my eyes at them. Getting to the age where I am the target demographic is a rude awakening.
Yeah, now you're watching the commercials like, you know what? I do need to boost my cell signal.
Yeah. But no, I'm like, oh, man, they did a Caddyshack parody of this beer company. Oh, okay. Well, now I'm intrigued. Who they got playing Judge Smales?
Yeah, right. And it was ridiculous. The commercials, I think, are always entertaining. But we do this thing. I talked about it last week. We do this thing with the Super Bowl that we got to get like the most, we're the most critical people when it comes to like the halftime show and the commercials. It's this weird hypercritical phase that we go in. All we're doing is being critical. Oh, well, if I was in charge of the halftime show, I wouldn't have done all those platforms. I would have done something. Oh, who gives a shit? Why are you so critical? The commercials last night, Twitter, it was like a whole bunch of Siskel and Ebert's about commercials on Twitter. Speaking of age, maybe they were good. Maybe they weren't good. They're commercials.
Right.
They're commercials. What are we doing here? Yeah. What are we doing? Yeah. Some of them were great. I thought some were really funny. I thought some were ridiculous.
Yeah.
We had a company that spent a lot of money on Jesus rebranding. That was weird in the middle of the Super Bowl. I'm not bringing up religion. It just was a weird thing that happened in the middle of the Super Bowl. The ones that can really kiss my ass, though. I'm not trying to cry during the Super Bowl.
Criticizing.
No, but I'm not trying to cry during the Super Bowl.
Okay.
And when we got dogs growing up and getting old and babies and dogs and then dogs making friends and people having to put their dogs down, I don't need a Marley and Me commercial during the Super Bowl.
Okay. I'm
trying to watch football here, and I'm getting all emotional by myself on the couch. Luckily, I'm alone.
Yeah. I lost the dog this past year. I don't know. I mean, I get why it's sad and why it's undesirable, but also like it's one of the most beautiful relationships in life, man. So celebrating that, even if it is for callous commercial gain, I don't know. It made me think about my dog, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Listen, it was beautiful, and the commercial was it was a great ad for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, 1,000%.
We're talking about the first one, right? With the lab. Yeah.
Yep. And then
the Amazon one kind of missed me a little bit, I thought. But the first one for like some sort of natural dog food was, I thought, very effective, especially because the implication of the ad was buy our dog food and your dog will live longer.
You know what? I hope somebody makes an ad that just has that as the tagline.
Yeah. Just cut all the other shit out and just a black screen with white text. Buy our food and we won't kill your dog.
Monty Python and the Holy Grail style.
Exactly. Yeah.
Buy our food. Your dog will live a little longer than you thought.
Wallet at the TV.
Cheers. We started a whole thing. And first of all, Paul Spencer's calling me a heartless dog hater. Get over yourself. I've had dogs since I was 10.
He's a troublemaker.
He is a troublemaker.
He's a troublemaker.
I like Tony here. Tony Bellau? Bellau? R.I.P. to all the dogs. You know what?
Yeah.
Shout out to all dogs. All dogs go to heaven. And Fumble, you're right. Losing a pet, the most painful thing. It is. I've dealt with some painful things. That's rough. That's rough. You didn't feed your dog our stuff. You're a loser.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Don't be like the team that loses the Super Bowl tonight. Feed your dog our stuff.
That was the vibe. Mm-hmm. That was the vibe.
All right. Let's spend the last couple minutes talking about some Brown stuff that happened. That was just heading into the off season that have happened since the last time we talked.
Yeah.
Last time you and I really talked, Andrew, was Thursday on All Eyes on Cleveland. And we were having an intense battle about coaches, defensive coaches. Why are these guys still here? What are we doing? Blah, blah. Well, very shortly thereafter.
Yeah.
It's announced that Jeff Howard from the Browns, he was their defensive pass game coordinator. He was their defensive backs coach, was sniped away and taken by the Chargers to be their linebacking coach. And so the Browns, it feels like that first domino that kind of happened, right? Like, I think part of the reason people were getting so stressed out about this was that we kind of expected things to happen, and then just weeks kept going by without things happening.
Sure.
And then nothing was happening. And so it was like a thing happened and everybody was able to breathe a sigh of relief, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and I see people in comments saying thank you to the Chargers. And of course, you know, you will know that I had pretty strong feelings about Jeff Howard myself. But listen, Brandon Staley is the head coach of the Chargers, and you can say what you want about him as a head coach. He is one of the best defensive minds in the game of football. Jiro Evero is a defensive coordinator who, you know, I'm rather fond of, is the new defensive coordinator in Carolina. And apparently Howard had an offer from the Panthers as well. These are two bright young defensive minds, and they both wanted Jeff Howard. So I am here to hold my hand up and say I was wrong about Jeff Howard. I'm not saying Mike was right. Let's just be clear about that.
I mean, but that's what I hear.
All I'm saying is that Jeff Howard did not come across well in his media appearances in Cleveland. And I mean, one of the points that you made that I do think is correct is that people rush to blame the defensive backs coach for miscommunications in the secondary when those could have their roots in a lot of different places. Regardless, it's obvious that he is a well thought of coach who is, you know, moving on to enhance his career. He's coaching inside linebackers instead of defensive backs. He's obviously trying to develop his skill set with an eye towards becoming a defensive coordinator. So Howard, you know, is a guy that I think caught a lot of hate in Cleveland. And I, you know, now I'm thinking I wouldn't be surprised if he's a defensive coordinator in the next few years.
Yeah. Well, again, the ultimate bottom line to all of this is that, of course, with a new defensive coordinator after a two not very fun seasons back to back,
right,
you're going to have the turnover. But again, turnover for the sake of turnover, it's the same thing. You know, we just went through the NBA, just went through the trade deadline. Making trades just for the sake of making trades doesn't just inherently make you better.
Right.
Turnover for the sake of turnover doesn't make you better. There's got to be purposes to things. And that was always my point in talking. I don't really give a shit about Jeff Howard, to be honest
with
you.
Right.
For me, though, it was if you've just hired Jim Schwartz and he wants Jeff Howard – and they're going to be able to work together, then let's see this thing through.
Yep.
But so Jeff Howard, we saw Eko Obiar here. Glad to hear that Kiffin is moving on. That is the indication, at least. Chris Kiffin is a, I think the last thing I saw was like a favorite to land a job with the Texans, I believe.
Yeah, I think the same job, but in Houston, yeah.
Yeah, so, it's coming. It's here. I think people just have to realize, I know the Browns haven't played in a long time, but the season ended yesterday.
Right.
The season ended yesterday, and there's a lot of guys now who are waiting. It's a holding game. Where are these coordinators for Philly going to go? Where are they going to wind up? Where are guys that are going to get poached from Kansas City? Where are they going to wind up? All these people are sitting here waiting just to see what's kind of going to happen around the league.
Yeah,
it takes a minute for the dust to settle after the season. And so I know the Browns were pretty quick to make a hire with their defensive coordinator. But, you know, now they got to, you know, you're hiring guys that you got to get the right fit for the right system. And Jim Schwartz has got to get the right guys. And it just is going to take a minute. So I think everybody, you know, it's kind of that sigh of relief. All right. A couple of these guys that people really want to gone are apparently going to be gone. One definitely. Right. Another one looks like he's going to be gone. And now it's just a wait and see game. But it doesn't seem like there needs to be any rush on this at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I think your point about some of the coaches from Philadelphia that Jim Schwartz worked with getting loose, you know, would be one thing to watch. You know, there's a pretty good defensive staff in Arizona. Some of those guys getting loose, if Jonathan Gannon goes there, would be another thing that might move this along. I mean, obviously now they have to make at least one, possibly two hires. You know, the other thing I'll just say is I listened to, since the last time we spoke, I listened to the Jim Schwartz interview on Cleveland Browns Daily, which I would encourage you all to listen to because, you know, it's one of those 20-minute interviews where they really dig in. And the thing that I took away from it more than anything is that Schwartz talked specifically about communication issues and explaining things clearly, simplifying things for players a few times. And so it wouldn't surprise me if still, even with these changes, we don't see a ton of turnover at the position coach level on the defense. I think the story from the front office and head coach of the Browns is that Joe Woods made things more complicated than they need to be a lot of times. And they think they've got the players and the system for the most part to do what they need to do if they just get out of their own way. That's, I mean, you listen to that interview from Jim Schwartz, he basically said that. Yeah. So that's my takeaway. And I think, you know, whether or not that's true, obviously time will tell, but that seems to be kind of the thinking is it's not a burn it down to the, you know, to the ground and rake through the ashes situation. They are looking to take a lot of what they've already done and build on it and kind of hit the ground running.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to see again, the season officially over today, the first day of the NFL offseason and a lot of stuff coming up. Obviously, we're going to be talking draft. We're going to be talking free agents. We're going to be talking trades, and the OBR is going to cover it like nobody else. But listen, the Super Bowl's in the books. The Kansas City Chiefs are champions. Joe Thomas is a Hall of Famer, and my beer is gone. And so now we're going to call it. It's time to call it for this episode of Unscripted. It's been awesome. It's been a blast. Thank you to everybody that joined us in the comments. Love that you guys are really a part of the show. You're not just over there in the comments, but we love having you as part of the show. Even Philly, he came looking for a fight tonight. You're not going to get one. You're not going to get one. I already brought you up. Real quick, again, back to the OBR. Get over there. Get subscribed. A lot of great stuff going on the OBR as far as writing content is concerned, as well as the streaming network. Tomorrow, again, we might have franchise mode. We might not. I'll just wait for Andrew to text me on that.
Jake's going to have a show tomorrow, and I think I'm going to join him, but it's Valentine's Day, so you know.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know. No, I don't. I got a show on Valentine's Day, and that is that takes precedence.
Okay, well, that's married life for you in a nutshell.
Yeah, pretty much. No, we'll see what's going on.
Leave me alone.
We'll see what's going on with the 7 o'clock hour, the 9 o'clock hour. Again, we are joined on Garage Beers by Curtis Danberg, the VP of Communication for the Cleveland Guardians. We're going to talk a little baseball, and we're going to talk about the Cavs and the Blue Jackets and the Super Bowl and all that stuff. Garage Beer is going to be a good time tomorrow at 9 o'clock. Wednesday at 7 o'clock, it's OBR Weekly with Fred and Barry. And then Thursday, it's All Eyes on Cleveland with Brad Ward at 8 p.m. It's a packed schedule here in the offseason on the streaming network. And we love that you guys all take the time to be a part of it. So that's going to do it for us. For Andrew, go follow him at Andrew Spade. For me, I'm Michael Keefe. Follow me at Garage Beers Mike. This has been Unscripted. Till next week. See you later. Cheers. Go Browns, everybody.
Go Browns.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.